Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And welcome to the Raw Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by the Dudley Boys of What Culture, Michael Hamflett and Michael Sidgwick, here to review everything that happened on last night's episode of Monday Night Raw. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review Raw and SmackDown, but also NXT, AEW Dynamite, pay-per-views. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, a roundup of the week complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on Wrestle Culture. As I said, though, joined by Hamflett and Sidgwick to review last night's episode of Monday Night Raw, which was better, Hamflett. And it's faint praise, but it wasn't as bad as usual.
Yeah, I sit here with about like 15 to 20% less existential dread than I normally would of a Tuesday morning, off the back of just a run of abysmal Raws, more abysmal than the usual, more abysmal than the bad that we've come to expect at WWE's low bar, and a major step up from a piss week pay-per-view. Like, Hell in a Cell was so boring and so little of it was any good that I just had like even less enthusiasm that I normally got for approaching a Raw at after clock of Tuesday morning. And this, yeah, it met my incredibly low standards just about for an episode.
Don't get me wrong, Sidge, there were some dreadful moments still on this show we will get to. But I think I saw Sean Ross Sapp tweeting saying, hey, guys, WWE have actually done qualifiers for Money in the Bank. We're giving them credit for doing the most basic stuff now. But when it comes to Monday Night Raw, it's genuinely surprising when they sometimes do that.
I mean, it was a terrible TV wrestling show and a terrible TV show. You still didn't have a main event planned. You still had an opening segment that built a main event. It's still fundamentally a piss poorly scripted professional wrestling show with innovated professional wrestling matches, dumb characters, unlikable characters, silly fantastical characters. And yet it did feel to a degree like the outwardly awful content churn had subsided under the idea that, oh Christ, fans are coming back and we've got a new cycle of storylines to tell. Ultimately, this felt like a 2019 Raw,
yep,
which in 2021 feels like a 1997 Raw. But it's still a terrible show. But I'm the same with Amplat. I didn't get that overwhelming nihilism watching it, purely because some of it was new bollocks.
Mm. Well, let's start at the beginning of the show. Of course, the still WWE champion, Bobby Lashley, came out, flanked, of course, by MVP and his ladies to celebrate the fact he defeated Drew McIntyre, yes, by a roll-up at Hell in a Cell. He said Drew McIntyre took him to his limits, but even at his best, McIntyre was still not good enough. And MVP reminded us that this was, of course, McIntyre's last chance at Hell in a Cell. He can no longer challenge Lashley, and they put up an image of Lashley celebrating with the WWE Championship and a sad Drew McIntyre. And they're going to toast with the champagne that they've got there to celebrate Lashley moving on and, you know, retaining that title, when the New Day interrupts with a trolley full of toast. Good news, love. They're not buying any more goo, but the bakery is in full effect. They come down. Toast, get it? They throw toast at them. Honestly, they've got the makings of a great sandwich with some of the stuff they hoy about on Monday Night Raw.
Tomato and goo sandwich.
Tomato, goo and bread. It's a lovely combo. You've got to have bread in there somehow. hey, here on Monday Night Raw, we only eat food for sustenance. This is not about enjoyment. You need your daily intake of goo and tomatoes, Michael Sidgwick. So anyway, MVP says all this clown bollocks is why Kofi Kingston was only watching Hell in a Cell, not getting involved with it. And Kingston says, look, I associate myself with my friends, people I trust, not users like you. Will these ladies will still be with you if you didn't have the title? Would MVP still be beside you? And Lashley said, well, it doesn't really matter because I'm not planning on losing the title, especially not to you. You lost the title. You were busy making pancakes. And that's why I'm here at the top of the hierarchy and you're at the bottom. And Kingston said, well, let's not forget, I did beat Daniel Bryan to win the WWE Championship and I beat you a few weeks ago. They show a replay, neglecting to include Drew McIntyre's involvement and all that, of course. And Kingston challenges him to a match at Money in the Bank. MVP guffaws at this suggestion, but Lashley immediately accepts. He reminds everyone that that was because of Drew McIntyre's involvement that he won that match. And he wants their match at Money in the Bank to have no interference, no outside involvement. So he's going to murder Xavier Woods tonight. Woods says, I'm used to people dismissing me. He ran down his accolades. He talked about, you know, the amazing stuff he's done with YouTube and not only all that, but he's an 11-time tag team champion too. And he wanted Lashley to underestimate him. And he looked up and he said, you and me, Bobby Lashley, tonight. Hell in a Cell! And Lashley accepted. We get another Hell in a Cell match, Michael Sidgwick. What do you reckon to this opening promo off?
Well, you're not alone in saying that. It was a little bit better than usual. From what little conversation actually reaches my timeline, people had a similar, like, incredibly detached, euphemistic tone in their voice about this role. But, like, let's boil down those elements. You've got a promo train segment with juvenile prop comedy that functioned to build the third consecutive WWE show on which there was a Hell in a Cell match. Come on. It's bad. It's bad. It's not good. It is trope heavy, totally diminished returns of a stipulation that's been dead for literally over a decade at this point. And there are still some corners that seep into a pretty well curated timeline that saying, oh yeah, they should get rid of Hell in a Cell, kind of lost its aura. Like, die. If you're saying that quote, if you're saying that take in 2021, you are a knob who has somehow generated 10,000 followers by following 10,000 people with your ancient, low-hanging fruit takes just to farm some likes. They are worse than the mutants. They are honestly, the performative positivity accounts are worse than the mutants. Sorry, I just had to get that out of my system. Bad wrestling television. But here's the thing. The bar is so low that for once, by setting up a match well in advance of a pay-per-view, tick, that's something they haven't been doing. By setting up a pay-per-view match that didn't happen at the last pay-per-view, tick, this now qualifies as a good thing. If I can be generous, I will say one generous thing before I hand over to my esteemed colleague. The actual use of prop comedy didn't merely function as a stupid thing to delight what's left of Vince McMahon's juvenile mind. It had a purpose in that it existed for MVP to bury it and to make him get serious. That was one halfway redeemable thing about just a bad WWE segment that is now apparently good because we've reached a new low.
It was hard as well not to see through the cynicism, knowing that the USA Network were kind of annoyed about the promotion of the Hell in a Cell match on Peacock, I think it was, like a TV Hell in a Cell match for Fox that wasn't for their service, that they get given one in the form of a Raw one a day later as well. Like, it's just, it, like, there was the appeasement was obvious.
Yeah, I was going to say, as parents of two children each, you must know that coming very well.
I recognise what was happening here. Oh, Christ, I've given SmackDown something. I best give Raw the same. But as well, like the other news story that came into my mind when I was watching this was that, you know, people thought Bronson Reed and Karrion Kross were there to work a dark match ahead of a call-up, but it's not that, is it? Triple H told his NXT trainees not to be complacent when they got to catering. And obviously, somebody went into catering and said, we need two people to put 88 slices of toast, and their hands just shot up. So Karrion Kross and Bronson Reed were kept nice and busy, ingratiating themselves with the roster, getting the prop, getting the props for the prop comedy ready. But yeah, to echo Cedric's point, this in any other week would have just been, oh, it's WWE's recent obsession, throwing food. They're just mad into that at the moment. But it was purpose-serving silliness. MVP specifically said that in a pretty, like, great takedown of the New Day's nonsense the other week. And this fed into that. And you got the feeling that Woods and Kingston knew that too. So there was a certain... we just like seeing, again, low bars, but we just like seeing the babyfaces getting to be intelligent. And you sense that they saw that coming. And it wasn't just that kind of like, oh, spontaneous match stuff. It was that they had the comebacks loaded up because they knew they were teeing them up in the first place. So it was nice to see the New Day with a bit of agency as well, rather than just being the fools.
As I mentioned, as part of this opening as well, there was a reveal that I think we're going to get 5 qualifying matches for Money in the Bank tonight. Good. I mean, it's the bare minimum, as we said, Siege, but good. Like, don't just say, this person automatically gets straight into a match with potential title ramifications down the line. So we find out it's going to be AJ Styles versus Ricochet. Prior to that, we see AJ Styles and Big George walking backstage. The Viking Raiders are there, and he tells them, Styles, that is, to watch him beat Ricochet into a pulp tonight. He's going to win Money in the Bank. He's going to become WWE champion again, and then they will defend the tag team titles against them. Eric says, we've beaten you before, we'll beat you again. Styles gets angry and knocks the turkey leg out of Ivar's hand whilst calling them stinky, smelly, something, a real zinger like that. And Ricochet cuts a pre-tape promo and goes, yeah, do you remember when I got butchered by Brock Lesnar in like 30 seconds? Yeah, that was pretty bad, but I'll do whatever it takes to win. Who knows? Fingers crossed. Good luck, everybody. And then we got the match. It's Ricochet versus AJ Styles. So unsurprisingly, you put them in a ring, give them 10 minutes. Yeah, they're good, aren't they? We should do that more often. You know, back and forth stuff here. Ricochet ducks a Pele kick. He hits a German suplex into a pin. That was great. Styles gets him in the calf crusher, but Ricochet gets a rope break. Styles hits a fireman's carry neck breaker, sets up for the nominal forearm. And then the Viking Raiders rush out. They're brawling with Big Jord Omos, who fights them off, goes to charge both of them, goes full Nia Jax being possessed by Alexa Bliss, runs at them. They move out of the way. He smashes through the barricade. This distracts Styles, of course, so by the time he goes for the phenomenal forearm, he lands straight into a recoil from Ricochet. 1, 2, 3. Michael Hamflet, Ricochet has qualified for Money in the Bank. Look at you.
Hello, bless him. I'd ruffle his hair if there was any there to ruffle. It, like, I didn't love this, which is a problem because it's Ricochet versus AJ Styles, and they're actually doing the work to promote a tag title match. They're trying to tell a story. That's WWE's fault. It's their presentation style. It's the Thunderdome. It's the constraints they put on their wrestlers, even when they're as good as AJ Styles and Ricochet. But I didn't hate it either. I'm struggling at the moment to do backflips over much of this product, and I think that's maybe part of the issue. There was a lot to like. I thought, you can just see with AJ and Ricochet when they don't mind giving their bodies over to each other to do the riskiest stuff. There's almost like a safety in their assurance of how good they're going to be with one another. But it, for some reason within WWE, like, it looks more boring than it would be if you were like a 200 seater indie. I was reminded of the match they had. I want to say it was a SummerSlam, where like AJ beat him for the United States title. And the same thing happened there, where it was definitely in 2019. And the same thing happened there, where you just can't quite work out why the moves aren't landing as much. It's because they're allowed to do one, and then it's right, turn it down, pull it back, turn it down, pull it back. And then you get 3 more moves, and then it's turn it down, pull it back, turn it down. And like, I don't know, like, this would have been a match where you could have let them go. And I think it would have helped them build the momentum that they're trying to around Money in the Bank, about the return to the road, about the return to crowds, etc. But like, all of this was broadly fine, and they did at least, they have done now 2 weeks of story to build to a tag title match for AJ and Omos. So, you know, it's all on the right lines, but I wasn't going crazy for it.
I wasn't doing backflips over this, and neither was Ricochet, and that's the problem. You stick this match on AEW Dynamite. I love doing this on a podcast because if you say this on Twitter, you get quote tweeted. You put this match on Dynamite and it's a star and a half better. Guaranteed. Like, guaranteed at this point. You know what the WWE style is. You know what the WWE pace is. And I know why they do it. And that makes me hate it more than solid, forgettable pro wrestling. Like, cookie cutter pro wrestling that I'll never remember or get, like, really thrilled by. And the reason why they do this is bad. If you didn't know this, I'm going to let you in on a bit of a shocking secret, right? WWE thinks you're thick, right? They think you are an idiot. They will constantly betray their own rules that barely exist in the first place, selectively, to drive whatever storyline they want forward in whatever direction they want forward, despite what's happened before. We saw it with the table stuff and Rhea Ripley versus Charlotte Flair. That just completely collides with the idea that the table is okay for Randy Orton to use as a weapon. You're not, they don't think you're going to point that out because you are thick in their minds. The reason why these WWE matches that would be a star and a half better in New Japan and in AEW, the reason why they're slow is because they think you are thick. And if they work at an absolute breakneck speed with sort of convoluted, super dramatic sequences, that you will simply get lost. And more to the point, Vince McMahon wants to slowly drain his talents so that he can maximize their usage. I know this doesn't really work because they haven't been on the road for a year and a half, but they'll be there soon enough, and they'll always be there. So he wants to preserve his investments, and he wants to make sure that you get it, right? So when all these old heads like Randy Orton and The Undertaker are talking about slow it down, brother. You heard about this thing called psychology. What they mean is, yeah, man, if you go too fast, these idiots won't be able to keep up. I think the total radical transformation of professional wrestling in North America would completely put a bullet in the head of that idea. But I'm not a billionaire, right? I've monopolized anything, so who am I to say that? I was bored by this, even though it was objectively good.
Riddle was walking up to Randy Orton backstage. Not only has he got the RK-Bro t-shirts, now he's got more merch. He's got a mug and he's got a bag where he keeps his stash. Not drugs, though, guys. Burgers. He rambles on about burgers, about the Burger King or some bollocks. Who cares? I'm very much on Randy Orton's side at this point. Shut up. Be quiet. Riddle asks him for tips on the Money in the Bank match and Orton told him to stay out of his way. And Riddle said, hey, wouldn't it be awesome if we both qualified for Money in the Bank? And Orton said, wouldn't it be awesome for you? And walked off. And then Eva Marie and her mystery partner were interviewed by Kevin Patrick, who was called Kyle by Eva Marie throughout this interview. She said she wanted last week to go perfect. She even got a mani-pedi just before the show, but unfortunately, she got a bit of a cold as well. And so she got her protege to take her place. And he said, oh, yeah, about her, actually. Been really bugging me. What's her name? Obviously, her partner goes to say, I'm Piper Niven. It's me, Piper Niven from NXT UK. But Marie goes, oh, no, it's Dewdrop. I don't even know what that means. Like, I know what a dewdrop is, but the way they've spelt it on screen is, I don't know. Even Piper Niven looked like, what the is this? And then she had to, I don't know, hold Marie's robe as she walked off before we got the match. Sid, your face is a picture. Anything you want to say about Dewdrop before we get to this epic betrayal?
We'll just get to the epic betrayal.
Okay, well, let's talk about the match and then we can talk about all this as well. Because, yeah, it looks like Eva Marie's going to start the match. They're facing Naomi and Asuka in a tag match. The winning tag team qualifies for Money in the Bank, of course. And Eva Marie immediately tags out, brings in Niven, who just wrecks Naomi, as she did last week. It looks like she's going to do a huge move off the top to finish the match off. And Marie spots her opportunity, tags herself in, covers Naomi. But Naomi, of course, kicks out. Big old shocked face. Eva Marie goes, all right, fair enough, that didn't work. I'll tell you what, you take over again and I'll take the pin again. And one sodding week after they debuted as this pairing, It's time. Dewdrop's had enough. She can't take any more of this. She betrays Eva Marie. She hops down from the apron. Eva Marie gets rolled up and pins. Naomi and Asuka qualify for Money in the Bank. Sweet Jesus, Sid.
Baffling. I'm just baffled. I don't know what they're doing. And I can't, therefore, provide analysis on what they're doing if I don't know what that thing is. Dave Meltzer, one of my favourite ever quotes, he was talking about Lars Sullivan at one of the Saudi shows going 3-on-1 with Lucha House Party in a presentation that did nothing. It was either Nount or something. And given Vince's predilection for pushing, like, just monsters, loves them, Dave Meltzer said, we are talking about a guy who's forgotten how to ride a bike. It's like, that's perfect. An absolutely perfect, remarkably succinct take from the genuinely venerable Dave Meltzer. He's missed an opportunity, as Vince, to be like really cruel, to tell this really cruel story about the willing, very talented, powerful wrestler who simply is not as telegenic as the person who has hired her services and will not get the glory. You can then tell a nice story that's going to put smiles on people's faces, throughout which Eva Marie's going to be like really callous, like incredibly callous to this person, Dewdrop, leading to either like a really unhappy ending, just because Vince likes them as well, or a happy ending that's simply not going to go anywhere and Eva Marie's going to get the bigger push because of course she is. But none of this has happened, and Dewdrop has agency. She was tutting at the idea of being sort of manipulated by Eva Marie. She expressed frustration that she would have to literally carry her coattails. And then she just betrayed her. I'm baffled. I'm baffled. What do you think is going to happen? What do you think was the plan was? Help me out.
No idea, man. Dewdrop, when she got off the apron, pulled the face that you guys do, that like cheek chewing expression when somebody's on Twitter talking about like hashtag long-term storytelling, which is ironic considering that this was the total opposite of that. Just hit it all off in a week. She was so like smug and chuffed with herself, as someone should be when they drop down off the apron for the tag in that spot, because it's typical of a story that's had weeks and weeks and weeks of payoff and that the person in the ring should never see it coming and all that sort of thing. And in character, it was a sort of a stupid call, because what a time to pull off that turn. One more beat down and 3 more seconds and she'd at least been in Money in the Bank.
Yeah.
You know, so like that loss has been far more damaging than the severing of a new relationship with Eva Marie. So not even that smart a betrayal at week two in the story. Like such a strange development this. I guess I'm sort of morbidly fascinated in where they're going next, but that's the only fascination WWE ever earns typically. Say for the one or two storylines that are ever decent, it's always just, that's like, that's weird. I guess I'll keep looking. It's not like I'm invested, but I'm, I'll pay attention to the segment a bit more because I just didn't see that coming this week. And of course it was with a roll up as well. Like, well done, Asuka and Naomi, two once beloved baby faces that are going to get huge reactions at the pay-per-view because fans remember. Like, they're going to get massive reactions and they've qualified via banana skin. Nice one.
One more thing to add on this is that I think what was astonishing to me, looking at why I do this to myself, I've got no idea. But again, I like to gauge the temperature. So I'll go on Squared Circle. I'll go on other websites and look at their comment sections just to get the measure of what people thought of Hell in a Cell. And I think everyone is unanimous in, yeah, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn had a good match, but, you know, it was well below the very best of which they're capable. Seth Rollins versus Cesaro, I think everyone was just like, it was good, but it was really boring. So I was like, Jesus Christ, people are going 2-foot on this. And it's not just me for how actually boring it was. Because usually people are like, you got the odd people who said it was not solid as if that was good. But mostly I think people were like, yeah, this is boring. This, who cares if that a good match? And that usually it's the good matches, the fact that they would be better elsewhere isn't acknowledged. They just think, well, it's good wrestling, so it's obviously good. Why they complain about it? That take just wasn't prevalent. Literally the one thing that I think that people really were nice about Hell in a Cell in regards to were, well, you know, something of a record. They had more women's matches than men's matches. People were like genuinely quite like pleased by that. Then what happens on Raw? Tag teams for the women, so that will get fewer matches. Like, they can't do anything. It's hilarious. They simply are incapable of doing anything that gets them over. It's fantastic.
I like the one when you get like, it was inconclusive, but I'll take another 10 matches, thanks very much. It's like, will you? I don't think I want 10 more. I'm like sick to the back arse of that combination.
I wrote on Twitter, someone said, like, someone agreed with the tweet I said about, I buried the word solid as a thing. And I said the exact same thing. Well, didn't get a finish for Cesaro Seth Rollins, but I've got no complaints about saying that one again. It's like, well, you can
maybe
do anything.
People should. Maybe, like, they should complain.
Don't read, there's several good books out there. There's several good, watch The Sopranos. Don't watch Seth Rollins versus Cesaro doing a 3.25 star on a SmackDown rematch. Like, watch The Wire. There's nothing weirder than wrestling fans who don't get bored of wrestling. I've decided. I don't know how you get in that headspace. They're the weirdest people on
never went dark, did I? Stuck with WWE stupidly through all the lean.
Yeah, but at least you're miserable now.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. It's made me a shallow husk of a man.
Like, you'd rather play Rocket League.
Yeah,
Are you still in Rocket League?
Yeah.
Class.
Think about switches. You can just pick it up and play and have like 15 or 20 joyous minutes. I remember I used to feel that way about wrestling matches. There it was, 20 minutes, like burst of joy, and it was done. Like,
hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Well, let's continue with Monday Night Raw and a match I can't get enough of. Rhea Ripley versus Charlotte Flair, because we have to continue with what's going on.
Oh, I cannot take it.
Thank God. Thank God. Yes.
This is still one that they're both still twats and have a rematch scheduled for Money in the Bank.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much it. Ripley went, well, I don't see why everyone's complaining. I've just done exactly what Charlotte Flair's done over the years. What kind of reason why people really dislike Charlotte Flair? I don't know if this was another double turn. I saw Murray and Nicholas talking about what happened to Hell in a Cell. I don't think you can double turn from both unbearable to still both unbearable, but still, yeah, they booked a match between the two of them at Money in the Bank, and maybe
about five commercials where they say, like, come on, buy tickets, and they're wondering why they need five commercials to sell tickets.
Yeah, so that's what's happening at Money in the Bank. Oh, thank goodness we're skipping all that bollocks. Instead, enough of all that. It's now time for this.
It's short. It's crap. It's wrestling related. The 5-star review. Nailed it.
And this week's 5-star review is brought to you by. Hang on, let me just see, make sure I get this name right. Matt Reigns.
Hey.
Matt Reigns, who titles his piece, is coming home. Quite right, Matt, it is. Good luck to England and to Scotland tonight in the European Championships. Matt Reigns writes, good morning, legends. Thank you all so much for reviewing last night's terrible episode of Raw. Don't know how you knew that in advance, but yeah. Two of you give me so many laughs every single day. Hamlet. I know we have a checkered past, brother. This feud of almost 16 months has been tiring at times, yet somehow I still have a bunch of respect for you and always will. Everybody knows your favourite wrestler of all time is Bret Hart, and it's easy to see why. So for that reason, I'd like to dedicate this five-star review not only to Hamflet, but to the greatest in-ring performer of all time. Could you review the segment when Shawn Michaels impersonated Hulk Hogan on Larry King Live? It would mean the world to me. Got your hopes up just a little bit, didn't I? Sige, love you, King. Wilborn, thank you for everything you do, mate. And to you, Hamlet, you are, without a shadow of a doubt, the worst there is, the worst there was, and the worst there ever will be. Cheers, brothers.
Matt Reigns, that is a hell of a promo. That is a hell of a pro wrestling promo. In fact, it was probably better than any promo on Raw last night.
I'll stop listening when he called me brother. I went to be sick, so I missed the rest of it. Later on.
Well, Hamlet, would you like to give us a brief backstory to what was Hulk Hogan versus Shawn Michaels at SummerSlam, of course?
Yeah, Matt Reigns has been wrong about every single thing in his stupid life, apart from two. One, he likes Michael Sidgwick, and two, he likes Shawn Michaels. Shawn Michaels is really good. He is really, really good. One of the best ever. I wish he wasn't ruining NXT week by week with his idiot best friend. Because I don't particularly appreciate the way the worm has turned with Shawn Michaels. It gives me no joy to see. I'm a Bret guy, but it was okay to be both. Like, imagine if people talked about wrestling on the internet in the late 90s. I wonder what they'd be saying about Bret versus Shawn.
I'm honestly going to jump off a roof if I say anything like that, but I will give you that pop.
What they were saying about Bret versus Shawn was that I just like one more than the other, but I still like both because they're both absolutely class. If anything, a lot of us were sitting there angry and frustrated that neither of them ever drew. That's what like I feel deepest about Bret and Shawn is that they never drew and that hurt. Shawn was amazing. And when he came back, like I love his run. I do love his post-2002 run. It's great. It's not as good as his 90s one. Real ones, no. And for 1 month, he brought the 90s back. Of that entire 10-year spell when he came back, for 1 month he brought it back, and it was in this spell against Hulk Hogan where he could do no wrong, where he seemed to locate the anger. Triple H loved calling him an angry young man. It was code for pills. But he seemed to locate the anger for 1 month. It was in July of 2005 in the build-up to this match with Hulk Hogan. And this was, if not at the epicenter of it, I think the famous attack on Montreal was probably the peak, but this came very close to it.
Because I'm right in thinking that this originally was going to be a three-parter, wasn't it? And it was going to be a draw at the end of it? Or maybe Hogan was going to win. I can't remember exactly.
I think they're just going to brother each other up and go 1-1, and then Hogan will probably win the trilogy. Mm-hmm.
But
that's a hazy recollection, and it's probably right.
But Hogan's going to Hogan, right, Hamflet?
That's right. Stroked his moustache and said, that doesn't work for me, brother. One and done. And it was all very like coy until the last week, I believe. So I think at this point, as like Shawn's recording this segment, he believes he's going to get his trilogy, but he also knows he's got to put Hogan over first to get that trilogy. And I think he's wise enough to know that on the night, Hogan might sort of say, like Shawn backed Bret on the night of WrestleMania 9, as wild as that sounds. So he's lived through it through somebody else before, so he probably knows he's going to get to work on that Sunday and think, I'm not going to get three matches out of this goddamn fossil. I think he knows. And I think that's partly what informs the fire of the build, is that he knows all along he might be getting out-brothered by the original brother.
Plus, wasn't the original plan for this not to necessarily have Michaels as a heel?
I don't know, but I'm glad it went that way. And I'm like, I don't think the chemistry of the angle would have worked half as well. I think he came out dressed as white, like dressed all in white, with a promo for Roddy Piper the following week where he kicked him as well. And I think initially they were going to go with him doing like a Shades of Grey thing, but it was just far better when he stayed into this instead.
So yeah, we cut to Larry King Live. And Hulk Hogan walks out. Well, I say Hulk Hogan. Shawn Michaels dressed as Hulk Hogan. Spends about 30 seconds getting to his chair with his little Walker Zimmer frame thing, and then falls onto the desk whilst taking one hand off the Walker to do the famous Hogan ear cup. Larry King, again, asks Hulky about Shawn Michaels. And Hulk says, well, let me tell you something, brother. This is a dream match, brother. One that I've always dreamed of, brother. Honestly, the amount of comments are like, oh, drink, have a shot every time he says the word brother. Yeah, that's the joke. But I got news for you. I'll be 102 years old, brother, by the time I step in the ring at SummerSlam, brother. Every day the Hulkster wakes up and he's not dead, brother. He's living on bonus time. And Larry says, so are you a good guy or a bad guy? Just to point out, whilst he's asking this question, Hulk Hogan is clutching his chest like he's having a heart attack. He says, well, on camera, brother, I'm a great guy. But when the camera goes off, brother, it's a different story, brother. Oh, brother, brother, brother. And then he flexes going, brother, brother, brother. Larry continues with his line of questioning, reading them off the piece of paper in front of him, saying, Hulky, do you still like the wrestling? Are you kidding, brother? I love it. It's in my blood, brother. It's also in my knee, brother, and my hip, brother. But I just can't seem to shake it, brother. And if I shake too hard, brother, it's going to be in my back, brother. Do you know what I mean, brother? Brother.
Move on. I would just like to point out at this point how impressed I am that Shawn Michaels as Hulk Hogan has not turned out to be Shawn Michaels as Hulk Hogan as Enzo Amore. So well done for that.
Not yet.
Think it's going to get there. There's a certain thing that he says the Jersey Devil and he is going to pop out.
It's coming, isn't it? And so Larry asks him if he's too old. He says, I got news for you, Larry, brother. It's not how old you are. It's how old you feel, brother. And I feel 157, brother. Someone who sounds suspiciously like Josh Matthews calls in to ask when we'll see him again in Battle Creek. And he says, again in Battle Creek. Oh, brother, that would imply I'd ever go to Battle Creek, brother. The Hulkster only makes the big towns, brother. Wonderful touch, that. And then Larry introduces a video package about Shawn Michaels and, of course, the turn on Hulk Hogan. This is spectacular stuff, Hamflet.
Unbelievable. Better than every episode of Raw we've ever reviewed as a trio in the history of this podcast. This single video package captures, and again, key to the act, captures Shawn less so in the baggy pants of the Jesus run and in the like pomp of his days as the Heartbreak Kid, because it's all about his arrogance. He talked about his like little lines, like he's not just the icon, he's the icon that can still go. That was a dig at Hulk Hogan in 1997 and Sting and Age in the Cage and all of that sort of stuff. He's going to give you the best show. Why? Because he can. Like, that was the Shawn Michaels that like you hated, but you loved hating, because he really was the best. Brett was the best ever, but like Shawn was the best too. Vince had them both, just nobody wanted to buy tickets to see it. And I love this video package, and it fed really nicely into the heel turn as well, because Hogan looked like Shawn was getting on a bit in the 2000s, but when he laid that super kick on Hogan, Hogan looked ancient. Like, he looked so past it, and it didn't look remotely believable that he could ever beat Shawn Michaels. And I think Shawn relished that, like relished talking about that in the build.
I just love that JR line. And they used it loads during this time about no one ever being able to outperform Shawn Michaels in a big match situation. I don't know why that always resonated with me. So anyway, big, big package. Isn't Shawn Michaels amazing? And the turn on Hogan, it cuts back to an open mouth Hulk Hogan mid flex, who just goes, oh, brother, like that. Dead. So, that's going to be a long... let's get the throat going here. Larry asks, what's going to happen at SummerSlam?
Get the vocal exercises. Couple of heaters.
He says, well, after seeing that, brother, I've obviously got some serious politicking to do backstage with Vincent K. McMahon. You see, brother, Shawn Michaels is obviously an amazing athlete, brother, but he never made it to the upper tier, brother. You see, when after I walked out of the WWE, brother, and decided to go make even more money somewhere else, brother, they gave the ball to Shawn Michaels, but he just couldn't quite get the job done. You see, he's got more important things on his mind, like becoming the greatest wrestler that has ever stepped in the ring, brother. He's more concerned about going there each and every night, brother, and stealing the show. He works just as hard, brother, in Battle Creek, Michigan, brother, as he does in Madison Square Garden, brother. You see, the Hulkster, he's got a philosophy, brother. Once those people are in the building, brother, you've already got their
Yes, in your front pocket, brother. But Shawn Michaels, brother, he'd rather go out there, brother, and nearly kill himself, brother, just to make sure those people get their money's worth, brother. But you see something, it's not going to matter. Because you know Mean Gene, brother, we're the Hulkster. At this point, his do-rag's fallen off, along with what's left of his hair. He's bald, and Larry interrupts him to remind him he's not with Mean Gene, he's with Larry King. But don't worry. Whatever, brother. He's selling tickets, brother. What you gonna do, brother, when the Hulkster comes at you, Shawn Michaels, at SummerSlam, brother? We're gonna hook up, brother. You and me. How ominous was this? You and me for the first time in history, brother. The first time, brother. The last time, brother. The only time, brother. And when that bell rings, brother. Oh, brother. He flexes. Yeah. He's flexing and he puts his back out. He gets a cramp. He's overselling, of course. And then suddenly he super kicks Larry King. And he gets serious at this point. He rips the ball cap off. Shawn Michaels is revealed to be the man behind the mask.
Ooh.
He's still got the mustache on, though. And he cuts the promo saying, Hulk Hogan, you've got your reality show. Hogan knows best. Well, at SummerSlam, what are you going to do when reality kicks you right in the face? And he super kicks the camera. I also like the bit where he super kicks Larry King, then throws his sunglasses at him. And that apparently wakes Larry King up. But yes, what a hell of a moment this was, Sige.
Oh, my God. Brett, this is a great promo. An absolute great build. Like, they've stumbled upon the sideshow rake gag in WWE canon with the brother stuff. Every time it gets funnier, there's a certain brilliant quality to the storytelling where it's cathartic even to those who still liked Hogan at the time. This is before it all went a bit wrong for him and he was revealed to be a complete arsehole. But Bret Hart fans, for the longest time, everything's, when you're a nerd like me and Hamlet, everything is through the prism of professional wrestling. Your entire chronology of your own life, everything's through wrestling. Your understanding of the world is shaped by wrestling. My favorite wrestlers growing up were Marty Jannetty and Hulk Hogan, right? Look what happened to them. And there's Bret Hart, who then became my favorite in 1993. And look what happened to him. There's no justice in this world. There's no karma. You'd be forgiven as a Bret Hart fan for thinking, just gonna rot on the ground when it's all done with, and just gonna get your lot all horribly random and more often than not unfair. And yet, when you look at this segment in retrospect, Shawn Michaels taking the piss out of Hulk Hogan as this bald, frail, money grabbing asshole looks literally precisely the same that he did at Crown Jewel 2018. This raked in baldy on a cash grab, making a dick of himself. This segment was awesome if you're a Michaels guy, and in the years since, it becomes even better if you're a Bret guy. Absolutely textbook pro wrestling, this.
we've got a phone call in from Riyadh. When are you going to come back?
Because the irony is that Shawn Michaels wouldn't come back for Madison Square Garden, brother. All the money in the world. From Battle Creek to Madison Square Garden to Saudi Arabia. Jesus Christ, everyone involved in wrestling is a complete dick. Then, now, forever.
Let's go to the comments section. As always, these do not refer to the views myself, the Dadley Boys, or anyone at What Culture Wrestling. Jason Fisher writes, here is, I just read the news about the passing of Larry King. R.I.P. Larry King. That's not Larry King. It's not Larry King, Jason. Come on. Giovanni writes, when I first saw this, I peed my pa because I couldn't stop laughing.
Peed his pants?
No, pa. Peed my pa. I peed my pa because I couldn't stop laughing.
Okay.
Jameson Relax Swang Thang writes, they both should have one more match at WrestleMania 38.
38?
Jesus Christ. You wouldn't get Sean disavowing God for 1 month because he'd literally need the help of the Lord to get through that one.
Uh, Olmeca Dark Rose, slightly off topic, writes, Sean is the man. I wonder how many girls he actually nailed in his time.
Oh, that's not going to those waters.
There's some stuff Marty Jannetty said. I think Sean probably wonders it too.
And the final comment here comes from Charo. I've no idea why they've gone on this specific video and gone, this is the place. This is where I make my stand. You guys know that Hogan's supposed to be my dad. He used to like my mum 10,000%, but he already had had a wife and kids.
Imagine the Hulkster at the hospital and someone gives birth. That doesn't work for the Hulkster, brother. Just walks out.
Gets like Jimmy Hart to pull out some paperwork, sign it.
The child's Richard Fleer.
Oh. Thanks once again to, I can't remember who wrote that review actually. Oh yeah, Matt Rains for that wonderful review. If you want to do exactly the same as Matt did, suggest something short, crap and wrestling, or that, not that it was crap, but something short and wrestling related and just something fun for us to talk about instead of Monday Night Raw, subscribe to What Culture Wrestling and leave us a 5-star review on there. And we return to Monday Night Raw where the roles have been reversed, guys. Last week, it was Mandy Rose and Dana Brooke doing a photo shoot. Well, this week it's Tamina and Natalya. Sarah Schreiber goes up to do an interview, but bloody noise in the back because Mandy Rose and Dana Brooke are training, as they should. Although, to be fair, so should Natalya. Practice your sharpshooter. How can you not do it yet? Anyway, they go, can you keep it down a bit, guys? And they said, we're just doing what you said last week. Put in the work. And Natalya, I'll tell you what, this is really... Oh, this is thrilling. This is why I love wrestling. Natalya says, we're obligated to do media as champions. Oh, good. Admin. That's what I like in my wrestling storylines. And they said, come on, let's have a fight. And Natalya went, I literally beat you last night. What are you talking about? And they said, no, come on, get in the ring. And as they go to get in the ring, Rose and Brooke drop kick them off the apron. Who were the baby faces? Who were the heels? Who cares? What a load of bollocks, Amphlett.
A bad angle that... has gotten worse, but for the second time in like 3 months maybe, Mandy Rose and Dana Brooke like are the only ones that understand how WWE works, shrugging off the results of matches. Like, remember the count-out loss they took? It's like, nah.
Oh yeah,
not worth it. And then like on this promo, it's effectively like Natalya applying a bit of logic. I beat you. Why should you have a shot? I beat you. So. Like, she's right. Like, Dana Brooke and Mandy Rose understand this universe far more than the rest of the wrestlers. When's that ever counted for? Give us our title shot. Just, so hideous that he doesn't know how bad it is.
But it drives me insane, this company. It truly does. On one hand, it's the most, like, artificial and contrived scenario imaginable. There's a training ring at the same time as you have an interview at the same time as you have a photo shoot. So you do... all of your duties as a professional wrestler in one magical place. This doesn't happen, hence why the performance center's a failure. Got him! And also, WWE is such a disorganized mess that I can, in fact, believe that such a place exists.
Let's move on, shall we? Because we've got John Morrison versus Randy Orton at a Money in the Bank qualifier. Next, Miz was wheeling himself around ringside whilst this was all going on. Morrison in control early on until Sid, I immediately thought of you when this happened. Randy Orton took him to the outside and slammed him on the announce table. No DQ, none of that. Nah, who cares? Yes, granted.
There are people on Twitter who I don't not respect who like ask these questions out loud. Oh, why? Because he's got soup for brains, man. And he thinks you're... That's why.
So as we go to a break, Orton stalks a man in a wheelchair, effectively. Morrison's in control as we come back, but Orton eventually fights back. Power slam, draping DDT, sets up for the RKO, but the rapidly getting over in Wilborn's world, drip stick gets utilised. It sprays Randy Orton in the face.
Wilborn's world, Harry Ward.
And that allows Morrison to schoolboy him for a two count, though. Thankfully, we're not having any distractions costing Randy Orton this week. Riddle comes out. He slowly chases a wheelchair-bound Miz around the ring as he's in a scooter. That distracts Orton. Morrison smashes into him. Starship Pain. 1, 2, 3. John Morrison qualifies for Money in the Bank, which I'm happy for him. But, yeah, a convoluted way to get there, Sage, let's say.
I mean, yeah, the match was totally incidental to the absolute bollocks on the outside. You've got a guy who's going to do something cooler in a ladder match than Randy Orton ever could. If you still cared about... Here's the thing about this. There was a theme throughout this night, and it was totally artificial change. Oh, there's loads of upset. That was the theme. It's better than your other themes.
Yeah.
All the time. So I'm happy with that. It's not going to inform any meaningful change, but it made for... it's a talking point. It's going to be a cool ladder match with Ricochet and John Morrison in. You know, I'm actually excited for this.
Yeah.
Like proper dumb fun. Really committed, dumb fun. The match quality was incidental to the bollocks on the outside, my latitude towards which is just growing ever thinner. I tell you what I actually actively hated, right? There's the kernel of actually amusing juxtaposition in the Orton-Riddle dynamic. And they've ruined it entirely. Like, Matt Riddle as Adomas is not as uniformly bad as it should be. In that sometimes Orton's crucial deadpan presence next to him actually half makes it work sometimes. But now that it's getting a little bit more emotional, it's getting a bit more rubbish. Riddle's whiny voice, Randy, Randy, it's like, oh, it's even worse than him being this food-obsessed moron. Randy.
Randy.
Just, I hope you get just punted in the head.
That's always been the problem with this, isn't it? Is the day that Orton finally knocks that prick off his scooter. It's going to be a bit too cathartic for its own good.
With the punch, Randy.
Yeah, like a fine match, and it never had a chance of being anything more than that. Yet that theme... Whenever they do this, like, yeah, as Sergio points out, like, night of upsets, things are changing. We didn't see all this coming. Like, it's true, but it's WWE, so it doesn't matter. John Morrison's first Money in the Bank match was 2008. So it's like, what's up that Morrison going to do with Money in the Bank? I don't know. What's just on the network to find out? Like, I lost myself in Wilborn's review of this match. Thinking about what Wilborn's world would look like, and all I could think of was, do you remember that?
that music just come on a loop, the Clown College music.
Frosty's advert, I think it was Frosty's, maybe Crunch of Conflicts, with that overexcited kid where I was like, it's gonna taste great.
Yeah,
and there was like all of a sudden, there was like thousands of people like spilling out the houses with bowls of cereal going, it's gonna taste great. And like they were all like rising at the sky like that bit in ET. Everyone's getting happier and happier and happier, and cereal is the best, and everything's the best. And somebody in the background's going, yeah, man. And then you get some cereal and you're dreading it and you're running for it, but it's just more and more cereal. That's Will Bond's world. Coming to Raw next week, Will Bond's world.
Everyone walks out the house and goes, hey, how you doing? Like, to every neighbor.
That kid, the whole crowd of people is suddenly brought to a stop. Hey, you all right? And they carry on. It's going to...
Wilborn's world, right. It's a gloomy, like, brutalist architecture. Grey skies. You know that white grey? That's somehow worse than grey in the clouds. And everyone's just walking around incredibly depressed, like ants in single file, doing their sort of indeterminate office job in these brutalist, like, building blocks. Then Wilborn goes, this is opposite land. Welcome to
going to the shops. Every single outfit is only a schmedium. That's only... Anyway, let's go back to Monday Night Raw, the depressing reality of Monday Night Raw. because what's his name? Carl Patrick. Yeah, he interviews Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler. Shayna says she's not afraid of anyone. Nothing's going to stop them from qualifying for Money in the Bank. Not, I don't know, people who can possess you or even superheroes. That wouldn't stop her either. Nia Jax goes, some up with Alexa Bliss. Nothing quite like her. Yeah, you reckon so? She possessed you yesterday, Nia. Anyway, the good news. Tyus O'Neill got nominated for the 2021 Muhammad Ali Sports Humanitarian Award because he's the only good person in WWE. And then we got Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler with the Somalia knobhead versus Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross. And what a 1-2 punch this was. Before we get to Nikki Cross, gents, what do you make of Alexa Bliss's new theme? If you didn't hear it, by the way, I'll do you want me to recreate it for you?
Yeah, I'll skip the entrances. Why waste more of my time than I need to?
Well, it's got Lily all over it. She's going nowhere if you think...
Just got who on it?
No, got sorry, who on one it? Second. I've missed a trick here because I haven't actually recorded the whole song with this preposterous... I meant to say the Tron doesn't have Alexa Bliss. It actually features... quite prominent. Yeah, Alexa says, "The evil is mine. Welcome to my playground. It'll be fun, I promise." And then the voice goes, "The evil is mine," and they play some guitar, and it's just a load of shh. What do you think of it, Amplet?
It's time for your spooky story. It's rubbish, man. It's just toilet.
There's one funny element of this is that from what you're saying, it sounds exactly what they did to Bray Wyatt's theme. So poor bastard Bray Wyatt's been watching this at home with like a solitary tear running down his cheek. My entire run is gone because there's a paedophile in WWE creative who's in this.
It's nothing to do with being set on fire on telly. It's a nonce backstage.
Well, at least I made all that money from the ridiculously expensive belt. How much for cameos? Why did we do that? So I thought...
Should we club together and ask him to do a cameo as the Sister Abigail that was supposed to fight Pumpkin Finn Balor just for us?
Buy one cameo, get your free vial of viscous liquid. So I watched that and I was like, oh, that was dreadful. Well, it can't get any worse. Cuts to the back... Nikki, I feel bad about burying this because I read about like Killian Dane saying this is Nikki's thing. She came up with it. She seems really happy with it all. But it's a load of bollocks. She's, I don't know, a superhero. Literally, she had a mask on, blue eye makeup around her. And I thought, well, that looks dreadful. But I suppose can't get any worse. She's talking about no matter everyone's shortcomings, you know, she's there to represent people and she's, you know, here to do her best. And it zooms out and she's got a full superhero outfit, complete with cape and everything. And I said audibly, what the? This morning, just as I was watching this in bed. Well, what do you make of it, Sidge? Because she knows what she's doing, basically, doesn't she?
I mean, she looks pitiable. She looks absolutely pitiable. And, you know, Killian Dane might have said this. And, you know, from what I know of Nikki Cross's work as Nikki Storm, could quite possibly be her idea. But at the same time, Killian Dane's got a previous... First of all, he's a wrestler. Trust a goddamn word these people say. Any of them. Right? Even the ones you think are... Other than Bret Hart, right? Don't just disregard anything that they say on public record. Killian Dane was the guy who on Twitter piped up when they said, and someone was like, oh, Christ, come on, Killian, man. Don't want to see it in a T-shirt. That time he wore one on SmackDown. I was like, no, that's not my, it was my idea. So these wrestlers, he doesn't wrestle in a T-shirt anymore, does he? These wrestlers talk bollocks on the regular. Look, we were having a little bit of a crack on about this. So I'll let Hamflet say what he said. Because I just think that, look, she's getting herself on telly. Absolutely fair enough. She might just be a bit of a dork with a rubbish sense of humour and, like, fair play that way. She might be incredibly cynical and astute and knows that what she's doing is far more likely to get her on TV. Fair enough. in that kind of Drake Maverick. Oh God, if you want to demean yourself to do it, I mean, it's a living. Pamphlet, you had the perfect take on what doesn't get on TV versus what does.
Yeah, like Nikki Cross is not as stupid as this costume looks, ultimately. She has come dressed for World Book Day, and the book is Vincent Mann's Book of Terrible Ideas that he loves. And she's going to be dressed as it. And every day is World Book Day in Vincent Mann's company. This will, if nothing else, get her more traction than her running her hands through her hair in Twitter videos, asking why she's not getting opportunities before the Royal Rumble. Because let's be honest, that's three quarters of the WWE main roster. And he doesn't care about any of them. He doesn't have respect for any of them. They walk past him in Gorilla and he just tuts and sighs and probably looks across that table at Jeff Jarrett and misses him. Like, he fired him on telly. Like, just, he has clearly, like, so little respect for his talent today that he sees somebody that isn't going like the Zack Ryder route to getting over and finding tangible ways to draw revenue, self-made, that he now wants to give to Vince McMahon. He's found somebody that's willing to be very silly. And Killian Dane and Nikki Cross is, like, what we're going to learn about the reality of this character perhaps gives it a little bit of heart and a little bit of warmth. But that's not at the core of what Vince McMahon's going to get out of this. He's going to get somebody looking pretty stupid. He's going to get a, you know, someone that, like, will be willing to do just about anything to get over and stay over, which she'll respect, bizarrely, and she'll get TV time in this role. And I hope this never happens for her, but if she was to ever get fired, like, superheroes do well on the indies. Molly's had no trouble as Mighty Molly. Hurricane is pretty much still a Hurricane inside and out of WWE the multiple times he's been in and out of that company. This will probably stick and not necessarily in all the worst ways. It's one side of this. The other side of it is it's a pretty terrible television character and we're going to get loads and loads and loads of it. But they're both two valid sides.
I used to love the fact that it was like, right, back to the good old days of Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss tagging. As we all remember, one's a superhero and one can possess people and has a spooky doll.
That was weird.
Yeah, mid-match, Bliss tries hypnotising Reginald again, but Jackson Baszler would just go, just don't look at her. And that apparently worked. You can just snap out of it. In the midst of all this, Nikki Cross comes off the top to wipe them all out with a dive. It's Cross and Baszler. Baszler gets given a back suplex by Nikki Cross and Bliss goes up to the top and hypnotises Reginald. It goes to twat Nia Jax, but stops himself. Jax, I think, shakes him, snaps him out of it, gives him a hug. Cross drops and kicks them both, rolls up Baszler, pins her. Who cares? Who cares? Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss are at Money in the Bank. And, well, start the fantasy booking now, Sige. We're going to have a hell of a time with this Alexa Bliss character in Money in the Bank.
I honestly can't wait, man, because in my head, are they doing a Raws before Money in the Bank, or is that the first one back?
There's a slap with the crowd.
Yeah.
Oh, even better, because I think that the, and it has done recently in recent years, the women's Money in the Bank will open Money in the Bank, because like separate the ladder matches, they're not that daft, and the men, you know, they will take priority. This is the first match on a WWE pay-per-view that isn't WrestleMania with fans. They're going to take a crap on it. They're going to reject it big time, I think. Or they're just going to just have no clue how to react. They're not going to go banana for it, let's put it that way. Let's talk about the match. There's nothing to talk about with the match, so let's talk about something else.
They've established the logic, though, with the Alexa Bliss character, that she's entering a Money in the Bank, a match all about big spots and big risks, where her quickest route to win is by standing still and doing absolutely nothing until the people that are staring at her also stand still and do nothing. She should, by rights, just look at all of the other competitors and stand there while she climbs the ladder at a snail's pace. That's how this character would win that match.
I do really hope, and only because she's wearing a cape right now, it could be anyone in this match, that someone's going to be at the top of that ladder about to reach it. Alexa Bliss is just going to look at her. And if you just don't look back, you look up the briefcase, she can't possess you. But they're going to look at her and she's going to convince them that they are Io Shirai in War Games with a bin on her head and just jump off the ladder. That's what's going to happen. And it's going to be epic. So I can't wait for that. Backstage, Sonya Deville, Postman Pierce, they go up to Drew McIntyre. They say, you don't have to compete tonight. You went through hell. And he goes, hang on, Bobby Lashley's in a Hell in a Cell match. I think I'll be all right. And then quotes Winston Churchill. Would he get a big book of quotes for his birthday or something? We'll fight them on the beaches. I thought it was William Wallace. What's going on, Drew? Anyway, they went, all right, mate. Good luck. And we're talking about new opportunities. And I was thinking, I'm really happy that, you know, the old tropes of just letting any old knobhead who's on the roster get into the Money in the Bank match just because they're an established name. So Jinder Mahal, Jeff Hardy, Sheamus and Cedric Alexander were backstage bitching and moaning that they weren't in Money in the Bank. Mahal and Hardy were like, oh, we were WWE champions. And Cedric Alexander said, all these bloody old antiques, I should be in there. I've beaten him twice. Diva went, well, you're not. Matches are final. Sheamus went, I shouldn't even have to qualify. I'm United States champion. And Pierce went, oh, so you're all right to defend the belt then? And he went, oh, no, my nose has started hurting again. I need to go and get it checked. And Jinder Mahal, ominously here, Michael Hamblett, said, so if something were to happen to one of the participants, maybe they should consider him as a replacement. And all I could think was, where the f*** is Damian Priest in all this?
Yeah, well, I've never even thought to even ask that question. You're in front of me, at least, on the future of Damian Priest. Considering how boring Mahal was as WWE champion, we can believe that he follows every instruction to the absolute letter, which it's funny to me that he was scripted. And I know there was supposed to be a sense of mystery around it, but like the most Jinder Mahal is allowed to shoot for the moon is by saying, maybe I could be a substitute. Like, maybe fingers crossed I can get on the bench. Like they're all just such losers, such browbeaten losers that this former WWE champion his hopes are that dashed already. But yeah, that's what I got as well. Like Jinder Mahal getting in, like spoiler for later on, I guess, but they talk about a last chance entry thing next week's Raw. They're going to have one. They do it anyway every year. There's always this like this extra way in that somebody sneaks in and all of that, whether it be through that match or through a battle royal or some bollocks. That was what I took from it as well. Jinder's going to be the one in the match that nobody wants to win, because the one thing you want to give potential ticket buying punters is a sense of dread.
Jeff Hardy had a cracker of a line here. Cedric Alexander, you're too busy future tripping. He might get wiped out by this antique. It's Jeff Hardy, he'll get away with that.
The title of his new album, probably.
Future tripping by Peroxide, yeah.
I'm gonna think about my past.
Surprise, surprise, Riddle yet again had the best match on Monday Night Raw this week. He faced Drew McIntyre, and the story of this match is McIntyre is generally better than Riddle, but his back is messed up. Riddle targets that. Eventually yanks him off the top, hits a senton, suplexes, kicks him in the back. Felt that one. Eventually McIntyre powers back though, suplexes Riddle off the top. Orton comes out, they go to a break. McIntyre goes for something else off the top, but Riddle counters it into a powerbomb, knee strike, goes for a Pele kick, but McIntyre blocks that and hits a Michinoku driver for a two count. Again, McIntyre comes off the top this time, but Riddle catches him in a triangle choke, which McIntyre fights out of and hits a future shock DDT for a near fall. Riddle goes for a floating bro. McIntyre dodges it. McIntyre goes for a claymore kick. Riddle counters that into a bro mission. McIntyre fights out. Glasgow kiss headbutt, but Riddle catches him in a victory roll for the 1-2-3. Riddle qualifies for the Money in the Bank after a great match. Goes to see Orton at the top of the stage, wants a fist bump, but Orton isn't happy, is not willing to give him the attaboy, and Riddle moans at him, basically. But a great match, Hamflet.
Yeah, great booking, great match, great result, great all-round. The quality of the work, I guess, was never in doubt, because Drew and Riddle are two of the best at performing in these circumstances, and we got lots of that here. A nice combination of the McIntyre chemistry with Lashley and Sheamus, and like Riddle's work specifically with Xavier Woods, of like combining a bit of a beef slapper with something that was approaching like a sort of hybrid classic by the end. Drew was wrestling like a man sort of half his own, like the size he used to be, perhaps to like to level up to like Riddle's speed and aerial game, which I just really, really liked. shouldn't be such a styles clash, because like Riddle's kind of massive too, but like it started to feel like one in a really pleasing way. Very few matches justified the time that this got, but this one absolutely did. And just a superb booking. Riddle didn't look like a cowardly figure getting to pick the bones of a guy that was bad last night. He was just like playing the cards he was dealt, ultimately, fighting against an ex-WWE champion with absolutely loads of pedigree and loads of guts. A bold result, but the right result. Wins and losses matter, WWE, and this loss, like last night's loss, will matter to Drew McIntyre in the long run. And like, and the RK Bro stuff was followed up on afterwards as well. So even that, like, they didn't waste time in the aftermath. And I liked all of this.
If you're going to no sell the gravity of the Hell in a Cell stipulation, that in the weeks beforehand you will piss and moan and blather on about how it changes people, like you can literally see that change scarred on Drew McIntyre's back, and he's wrestling a night later. Like, God damn it, you can have a night off. If you're not going to do that, pin him clean in the middle to convey that he's been weakened by the Cell. Like, again, low bar. I shall take that low bar. There were elements here that I think this match at some point was so good that there were like kind of clunky moments where Drew was throwing himself into Riddle's like triangle and stuff like that, where it felt clunky, but of course it was going to, but it really resonated as a struggle, which is such like lovely contrast to how polished and nice and clean a lot of WWE wrestling is. Yep, I thought this was excellent. Not excellent, but very good.
Let's hope he makes it to that last chance triple threat for the Money in the Bank match. Drew McIntyre, Randy Orton, AJ Styles. If only there was a connection that linked Jinder Mahal and Drew McIntyre in the past that we could do some LTST with. Well, we'll see. Not only that, next week, though, we are getting a... I genuinely can't think of any other company that have advertised anything like this in the next few weeks or months. A strap match. Well, it's original. Jackson Ryker was whipping himself in the back when Mansoor walked up. Mansoor himself tweeted, like, why is my career like my career mode on 2K at the moment? He's asking Jackson Ryker for some advice, and the advice Ryker gives is never let your enemy escape, which is why I've got a strap match with Elias next week. And Mustafa Ali, congratulations, Mustafa Ali, by the way, and his partner, now expecting in December. But he says that Mansoor is looking in the wrong direction, asking the wrong people. They should be asking why they weren't in the Money in the Bank qualifying matches. And Ali said, if you aren't given the chance to climb the ladder, you have to build your own. And Ryker is whipping himself whilst all this is going on. Very excited for a strap match, Sige. Original, like this.
Look, I'm going to give them some credit here. You know, I never usually miss an opportunity to dunk on these dickheads, but they've done two count-out finishes, right, with Elias twice running away over consecutive weeks. I think they at least happened around the same time as the strap match was set up. I think they've had this one on the chamber. I'll give them that. The idea is Elias can't run away from a strap match. I'll give them it. Weird promo. I don't know how this guy is a babyface at all. And one way, this is a bit unorthodox, but one way of selling the brutality of the upcoming strap match is to strap oneself and don't sell the pain of how much it would hurt. I wouldn't do that, but, you know, I'm not a billionaire. I've never monopolized anything.
This segment, one before it, where it was Adam Pearce, right, scaring off Sheamus from having a fight, whatever. The only thing sadder than backstage at Raw is when there's a party backstage at Raw. Just every single time they do one of these, several wrestlers like intermingling backstage, it just looks like the most miserable existence. I wouldn't swap my life for any of theirs. And like, I got an all right life, but I don't think that's the ideal message to be sending.
Yeah.
Wouldn't trade it for any of them.
And yet again, before we move on, Mansoor, that line is much better on Twitter than anything that's been scripted into his mouth. So, oh, everything's bad. And you get a reminder of that every day.
Well, we got the main event, finally. It was the Hell in a Cell match between Bobby Lashley and Xavier Woods. This was enjoyable. Not given too long, 15 minutes, something like that. Nice main event. Woods, obviously, was trying to cut corners because it's Bobby Lashley he's in there with. He tried to attack him at one point with a chair and Lashley just punched it into his face, which was great. Woods, though, does use his speed, his agility to get into this. He dodges a spear, drop kicks Lashley into the cage and then just twats him with a chair as we went to one of the breaks. Eventually, after obviously we come back, Lashley's in control naturally. Woods fights back, kendo stick shots, a wheelbarrow face buster for two, a tornado DDT for a two count. Woods even slips out of a powerbomb, super kicks Lashley onto a table that's been set up in the ring, and it's a diving elbow drop off the top rope through the table for two. Just a wonderful moment that. In the end, though, Lashley chucks Woods into a chair that's set up in the corner. He hits a spear, he puts the hurt lock on him, and Woods has to submit. But post-match, after all that, they want to make sure that they really make a moment that Kofi is recognizes the power of Bobby Lashley and the threat that awaits him at Money in the Bank. So MVP gets inside the cell as Lashley continues to attack Xavier Woods post-match. Locks the cell shut, MVP, so Kingston can't make it inside and he has to stare through the mesh watching Lashley rub his mate's face against the cage and put him in another hurt lock. Kingston screaming at him to let him go, torturing his friend as we go off the air. I mean, sadistic, but an enjoyable conclusion to Monday Night Raw, Hamflet, and that's maybe why I thought, is this show getting better?
Yeah, it was all pretty decent, this. Continues to be like a reasonable build to Lashley and Kofi. It's been on the table, obviously, since the middle of last month. They were looking through the Drew McIntyre match, and I can appreciate that because I like to see the process when it functions well. I don't want to see the wires, but I like to see a well-functioning process, and it's obviously something they've thought through. And the Hell in the Cell bit wasn't. They've had to use the cell because they've had to apologise to the USA Network, you would assume, and it was still set up. So they found a way to make the cell. Like, they incorporate the cell in it. Really good visual at the end of that, like, hurt lock up against the cell right in Kofi's face. The reality of the threat that awaits Kofi. And the match was decent as well. I think I don't want to be biased against the wrestlers I don't like versus the ones I do. So I will say, I think your mileage on this match will vary based on how much you enjoy Woods and Lashley. Because a lot of it, like, in its pacing, if not the work itself, was quite formulaic. There was a lot of a sense that you were just moving from street fight spot to street fight spot to street fight spot that happened to have a cell on top of it. But I like the work of Lashley and Woods, so I like this match.
Yeah.
That elbow, he's got such a goddamn spring in his step. That elbow nearly overshot.
Yeah.
Like, Woods, Xavier Woods, like, I love this program, but I think I would flip it, and I wish he was beating up Kofi, and I wish it was Woods being like, look, if this is what I do to the serious one in your group, what am I going to do to you? I really wish they'd flip this, because Woods is the money guy for me, but we got this anyway. Really, like, really, really great match, because I like watching these two work. And yeah, they've not stumbled with the Kofi stuff yet. And what are we talking, like 4 weeks maybe to the Money in the Bank? Like, I really hope they don't, because I think this is something crowds will pop for. I think they'll get an earfall in this that I think the crowd will absolutely love if they don't screw this up before the pay-per-view.
A well-worked, totally redundant match that to which I was completely desensitized by the fact that I've seen like four across three consecutive WWE programs. And I like Xavier Woods a lot. I think his performance here, in the spirit of it rather than the art of it, if that makes any sense, was like really strong. But if nothing else, I really got a renewed admiration for Bayley watching this. What's happened is two very similar things. Bayley and Bianca basically told with a few days' notice, are you going in the cell, by the way? Because we're going to do Ray versus Roman on SmackDown. You can have this one because we need another one for the... They had a couple of days' notice, and Bayley put something possibly a little bit too cute together, but I'll never decry creativity in this company. I suspect, because USA got a bit pissy, the exact same thing happened to Woods and Lashley here. And I think that it's a harsh thing. You shouldn't be putting the two pairs of workers against each other. You should be burying the company for imposing this like dangerous match at the last minute on both of them. But you know, the contrast is there to be made. And this is just a little bit too boilerplate for me and redundant and, you know, repetitive for me to really care about. But be nice to the people involved. It was good enough. And if it wasn't for all the Cell stuff, to which I'm just, ugh, like, the storytelling's genuinely strong for a fresh main event angle. And how often can you say that about WWE?
Pleasantly surprising, but not always surprising episode of Monday Night Raw. But do let us know your thoughts on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. What I say, you can follow all three of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett at
Michael Hamflett.
Follow Michael Sidgwick at
M. Sidgwick.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE. And make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts. Still to come today, our AEW Dynamite review, slightly delayed, obviously, and our NXT preview to come later on today. And whilst you're out of subscribing to What Culture Wrestling, leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, just like Matt Reigns did, and suggest something short, crap, and wrestling related for us to review instead of a god awful Monday Night Raw segment. But this has been the Raw Review. My thanks to the Dadley Boys. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.